Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear. Cause the truth will be too much.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Finishing strong with what you need to know. Seth Kizer from The Athletic coming up. Of course, our need to know brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. If you want to put it in order, pick it up, take it home. By far the most underrated part of Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views, the most underrated part, the eats, right? Made from scratch menu, wings, burgers, so good. Grab it right now on your way home to watch some NBA draft, or grab a seat at Twin Peaks. Adhering to all the protocols, TwinPeaksRestaurant.com for more details. Independence, Analeta, again, 29-degree draft beer. Best TV setup, of course, served by the world-class Twin Peaks girls. Eats, drinks, scenic views, that is Twin Peaks. Again, online at TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Need to know that KU and Texas are not going to play this weekend. No loss for the Jayhawks this weekend. That game has been scheduled to December 12th, so the Hawks not going to play. Not going to have to mess with the Texas Longhorns, so no action there for the Kansas Jayhawks. Let's get to some Chiefs conversation right now. The Kansas City Chiefs having their Zoom press conferences today. Andy Reid asked about the Chiefs' newest acquisition, DeAndre Baker, signed to the practice squad. 2019 number 30 pick in the draft by the New York Giants, was accused of robbery. All those charges have been dropped. In fact, it should be noted that extortion charges have been brought against the lawyer for the people that were accusing DeAndre Baker of robbery. And it should also be noted that DeAndre Baker had some character flags coming out of Georgia. Andy Reid was asked what his pre-draft evaluation was on Baker and what he could bring to the Chiefs.
He was a good player in college. He did a nice job at Georgia. He and Mecole Hardman are good buddies. And really, Brett's been doing everything to this point, and will continue to do it. So full trust in him to whatever he wants to do with it, we go. And so he and his guys do a great job of evaluating. Other than that, I don't know much about him other than he was a good player at college.
He would go on to say, when I asked him a question about basically, like, because, you know, we mentioned DeAndre Baker graded 183rd amongst all corners last year for the New York Giants as a rookie. No interceptions, 9 pass breakups. I said, hey, you know, kind of a rough year last year. Year two, though, do you need a year? Is an apprenticeship year important for corners? When do you know what you've got in a corner? And he took the time to say he's been told, work hard, you know, keep your nose, you know, focused, or you'll be out. So to me, I took that as he was sending a message to him. I pointed out that the Chiefs have taken a shot on a number of guys that were formerly high draft picks with mixed results. Reggie Ragland, I think, was a good player once Steve Spagnuolo came in. I think he was a serviceable guy early on, but Steve Spagnuolo used him sometimes as kind of like a glorified defensive end. Got some productivity out of him, but didn't go on to live up to what his draft expectations were. Cam Irving, former first-round pick, started a number of games, but got worked over a lot. I will never forget the image of Aaron Donald destroying him in the game against the Rams back in 2018. They took a flyer on Kelvin Benjamin after he'd been released, I think, by two teams, former first-round pick of the Carolina Panthers. He dropped the one pass that he was thrown in the end zone. Morris Claiborne was brought in late in last year's camp. He had some moments, but really never a significant contributor, and certainly not a big contributor in the Super Bowl. Darren Lee never really could crack the rotation, special teams guy at best. And Ogba, Oklahoma State kid, high second-round pick of the Browns at DN, had 5 sacks in about 5 or 6 games. Maybe it was 7 or 8 before getting hurt. I forget what the number was. So mixed makers. We'll see where DeAndre Baker is, but I would not expect him to be a starting player for the Kansas City Chiefs at any time this year. If he is, great. They've found the diamond in the rough, and I think it's a worthwhile, you know, signing. I'm not against the signing. I'm for the signing. There's a pedigree there, and you have your coaches because presumably they're better than other teams' coaches. So give Sam Madison a shot. We'll talk to him tomorrow. He's going to be one of the position coaches that's made available. Steve Spagnuolo will be available. We'll see what they envision for DeAndre Baker. But right now, not even a member of the active roster, therefore not going to be made available to the media. Maybe something's there, maybe not. If there isn't, it's not a big deal. the Chiefs can move forward. Patrick Mahomes talking today about the kind of pressure. He was asked about the pressure the Raiders got. They were only brought four in that first game, but consistently had him on the run. He was asked how much of the pressure was the offense's execution, how much was the Raiders' defense making plays.
I mean, of course, they have a lot of great football players, so they're going to make plays here and there for sure. But when you look back on the game, there's probably some times I should have probably got rid of the football. So just trying to know when to try to make these big plays happen and know when to just get the ball out of my hands is something that I battle with every single week.
Nice answer, and what you expect a quarterback to say. However, the Charger game, he looked frustrated, and the Raider game, he looked frustrated. There was not enough time. I appreciate him taking the bullet, but the offensive line was not good. And look back, Curtis, and see when Mitchell Schwartz, what was the last game Mitchell Schwartz played?
Okay.
I'm not sure that wasn't the last one. And they finally said, listen, you're not healthy. You got to get right. Or we got to get somebody else out there. And it was clear. We talked about it from day one. Mitchell Schwartz, on the first snap, the first offensive snap, he got beat by a Texans defensive end. That's not Mitchell Schwartz. You knew he was hurt, right? And so I think they played better as an offensive line unit. Mitchell Schwartz not practicing today. Neither was Taco Charlton or Debo Keys, also not practicing. Schwartz because of the COVID. And Andy Reid said the back, but he's also not eligible yet from the COVID contact list. Martinez Rankin, Eric Fisher, they weren't practicing either. What'd you find?
The last game he played fully was that Raider game. Remember, they brought him out the next week. He started the Buffalo game with the sore back and left after I think, eight snaps.
I think a healthy Mike Remmers, they'll be better prepared against the Raiders. The Hard Knocks guy, the third-round pick from Eastern Michigan or Central Michigan or wherever, white guy with the tats, solid player, but he's not better than Mitchell Schwartz, and he was beating Mitchell Schwartz, having a day against Mitchell Schwartz. You knew he was not right. I expect the Chiefs' offensive line to be much better in this game against the Raiders. I said it yesterday. The Chiefs will empty the clip on the Raiders. I think they're going to win, and they're going to win big. I thought this was interesting. Charvarius Ward tweeted out that he was in a slump earlier this year. If you recall that Raiders game, he was beat for a couple of big plays. Steve Spagnuolo said that following Thursday that he took credit for one big one that he got beat on. He said, I put him in a bad spot. That one's on me. Ward was asked, how motivating it was to get out of the slump, or when he will. Actually, the phrasing was something like, is the Raiders the perfect time to get out of this slump?
I'm already out of the slump, man. The slump, that's over with. I'm already out of the slump. We love playing the Raiders, man. It's a division game. It's a rivalry game. They got us last time. So now we're just going to come out and this game and be at our best, and hopefully we'll get our rematch and do what we're supposed to do.
I like the confidence is back. I'm out of my slump. I'm ready to go, and I agree. I think he's played better football. He's been beaten before, but corners are going to get beaten. I think Charvarius Ward's a good player, and I expect a big game for him. And I expect a better game for Steve Spagnuolo. You know, a couple times a year, a defensive coordinator is going to get had, right? The other guys are paid to do a job. You hope those days aren't in the playoffs. But I expect Steve Spagnuolo, I expect Andy Reid, I expect the whole coaching staff to have a better day. John Gruden on the other sideline. Big news coming out about the Raiders. Their entire, basically what was called by Ian Rappaport, is virtually their entire defense has been sent home with the contact tracing. That's put this game in jeopardy. A lot of people speculating that this game will get moved off Sunday Night Football. It is not now. As of right now, has not been moved off Sunday Night Football. But stay tuned. I would expect maybe they'll get word that they're getting negative tests out of the Raiders. Negative tests continue for the Chiefs. And so all the guys are going to play, and they'll hold it there. Maybe it's something that they will simply put a couple of, the other game on alert. And if everybody's back practicing Friday or Saturday with all the cloak and dagger that goes on with when guys are eligible to come back, if that happens, then maybe they won't move them off Sunday night. I'd be ready to be moved off Sunday night into Sunday during the day just so they can have a game that seems more likely to play on Sunday night. Or maybe even move back to Tuesday if the Raiders end up needing more time. Remember, that's happened a couple times. Early Monday, we've seen that happen as well. Gruden today asked about his team's COVID situation by Adam Teicher during the call with the KC media.
John, there's a report out that basically your whole starting defense has been put on the COVID list. Is that right?
I don't know about the whole defense, but I'm not going to really get into what list anybody's on. We practice today. We'll be ready for the game on Sunday. Coach, how difficult is that? I mean, obviously we live in a fluid situation here, but as an attention to detail kind of guy that you are, how difficult is it adapting to the environment to prepare for a football game?
Well, that's what you have to do. Everybody's got to adapt to a lot of change in every phase of life. And, you know, we had to go through some things before. And like I said, we'll be there on Sunday. We'll be prepared, and we're excited to compete.
All right, he says they'll be there on Sunday. Like he said, I don't know about the whole starting defense. Sounds like plenty of guys on it, maybe none of the backups. By the way, can we just say that the Raiders suck at social distancing around their complex? If even the idea by a legitimate NFL reporter is that the whole defense, whole starting defense is contact trace, like that they're not good at that?
No, they're as bad as you could possibly be.
Starting this Saturday, all NFL teams must operate under the league's intensive COVID-19 protocols for the remainder of the season. This according to a league memo sent out from Roger Goodell to all of the NFL teams. ESPN got a hold of this, and they're saying, look, it works. Basically, all meetings are going to be virtual or in the biggest room you've got, which has to be NFL approved. I'm thinking it's like the concourses at Arrowhead, that big, what do they call that area, the Arrowhead Club or whatever. Those kind of things, that's what they're talking about. So they're feeling it. They're feeling the pinch of all the positive infection rate going up in this country, and the NFL trying to do everything they can to keep playing games. News from the New York Giants, they fired O-line coach Marco Colombo. He apparently had a quote-unquote nasty verbal confrontation with head coach Joe Judge. I can tell you there's some people around the leagues whispering that it wasn't just a verbal confrontation. Now, was it they got close and had to be separated? Were punches thrown? I don't know. But I've heard it was more than that. So stay tuned as far as that goes. Robinson Cano tested positive for PEDs. He suspended the entire 21 season. Happiest team out there? The Mets. They don't have to pay him $24 million in his late 30s to not play that very well. NBA draft, you'll hear it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHP tonight. Knicks moving up in the draft. They've got the Jazzes. They've acquired number 23 in the draft in exchange for 27 and 38. The Knicks now hold 8 and 23. I think we could say the Knicks are back, right?
With a vengeance. They're ready to rock.
The Sixers got a hold of Al Horford in free agency last year. They clearly didn't think it worked, because they are trading Al Horford and a first and second round pick to the Thunder for Danny Green. Basically what that is here's a first and a second to take this dog contract off our books.
Essentially, yes.
I mean, the Thunder want picks. They've got cap room. They're like, yeah, he can come grow old here with us. And he's kind of a veteran presence. The Sixers are like, you know, no one on our team can shoot except our 7-2 center, so maybe we should get a guy who can throw it in the ocean. That's what that is. More fun like that. Almost every pick is traded in the NBA draft. I love it. Can't wait for it tonight. If you're out and about, check it out here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. As Todd Lebo says, the home of everything that's blank and great. We will take a break. When we come back, Seth Kaiser, he's great. He's next here in the program.
The program with Seren Petro.
When we stand next to me, go, wow, this is a big guy.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action, and he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on the program.
We keep things rolling here in the fourth quarter. Need to know brought to you by our friends. Seth Kaiser, need to know. Looking at a segment back. Seth Kaiser brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Integrity matters, and it absolutely does with Easton Roofing. I know they've been on my roof, residential and commercial jobs, no matter how big. In fact, they're working on a couple of 20-plus story buildings right now, but it doesn't matter how small either. Easton Roofing at 913-257-5426, handling all the jobs in-house, not just a one-man show that comes out, gets you to go with them. the whole company is just him and his pickup truck. And then he takes it off, puts it out to the lowest bidder for the gig. That's not how Easton Roofing works. They know all the folks that work with Easton Roofing, work for Easton Roofing, including the guttering jobs as well. Researching what is the best solution for you. Yeah, that's unique. They don't just go straight to the re-roofing. If there's an option that says, hey, we can do this a lot cheaper right here with a quick repair, right, or a subtle repair, and that's going to get us through the next couple of years, and then maybe, hey, cash flow's better, right, in these COVID times. Don't you want to know every option that's available to you for your home or your business? Of course you do. That's how Easton Roofing operates, the way they would want to be treated. Easton Roofing at 913-257-5426, serving the entire metro, including Lawrence and Topeka. Let Easton Roofing get you back to life. Let them get you back to business faster. Easton Roofing, integrity matters. Seth Kaiser, welcome to our T-Mobile guest line. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Seth?
I have absolutely no complaints, but I am, I hate to say it, but I'm kind of rooting for the Chiefs to get moved off Sunday Night Football. Usually I love Sunday Night Football, and while I don't live north of Minneapolis by 3 hours like you do, I live in Kansas City, and it's supposed to be probably 41, 40, 39, 38 on Sunday night. And my friends and I have made a pact that we're going to sit outside, masked up, watching every Chiefs game together like we would normally do, inside, like sane individuals. So I will not mind a noon – well, we probably won't get noon – a 3 o'clock start to make it a little bit warmer. But I am concerned about this game with the news about the Raiders today. How concerned are you?
It sounds like they've got a bunch of close contact stuff, and this is, as the season progresses and as things have progressed in our society, we knew we'd see weeks like this. I think a lot of times we've had this close contact stuff. A lot of the times the players have been able to play at the end, so we'll see what happens. I weathered the games. I kind of want it to be on Sunday night. As much as I want you to stay warm, you got to remember, to me, I mean, that's still shorts weather. So, I as sympathetic as I am, you can always just throw on an extra layer, because I really do want this game to be on national television, because I think we have an opportunity to maybe see Petty Andy Reid, and I want the entire football nation to see it. And it might get buried a little bit more during a Sunday afternoon game.
All right, a couple things there. One, 40 degrees and up is shorts and a hoodie. So I am down with you on the shorts, but shorts and a hoodie to like run around and have life and go in and out of buildings and in and out of stores. If I got to sit for 3.5 hours outside, I'm not shorts and a hoodie at 40 anymore. Maybe when I was a kid, but I'm getting older. So that's number one. Number two, I'm with you on my description of this game has been Andy Reid's going to empty the clip on the Raiders. Like, I think if he gets them down, he's going to pour it on. And everyone seems to think that that's starting to make me nervous as to why Vegas isn't in that frame of mind and why this is only 7. Maybe I'm not giving credit to the 6-3 record of the Raiders, but this feels more like a 10-point game, or am I missing something?
I think a lot of people, and I would probably include the sharps there in Vegas, look at the way that first game went down, where really Steve Spagnuolo got outcoached. And you and I have talked about this, and I think Spagnuolo would admit it, right? He would say, and I think he did talk about, they got caught in some bad looks. They got caught with some tendencies and some tells, and the Raiders took some shots on the perfect plays with the correct blitz pickups. And that's something that maybe a lot of people see and say, ooh, I don't know if that might happen again. It might be giving too much credence to one game, because the reality is that was the first game where Derek Carr really started airing it out, right? The Chiefs went into that game kind of playing him similarly to how they played like the Joe Flaccos and Drew Locks of the world, guys that they thought they could kind of bully and push around, and basically dared him to air it out, and he did. I don't think they're going to go in with that exact game plan again. And so I think you see people putting a lot of credence into that first game. And then additionally, while the Chiefs did put up 32 points, they maybe weren't quite as dominant as they've been in some outings. Although I personally think that was a lot more about self-inflicted wounds than any particular game plan the Raiders had. So I think that's why you're not seeing Vegas line move so much, because I don't know if you're going to move it based on player quotes. I just, the fact that enough Chiefs players are saying the things they're saying, and you've got the Chiefs, Twitter account tweeting, we'll let our play do the talking. obviously this has become a personal thing, and I find it hilarious. And John Gruden seemed really annoyed during his presser, so that makes me happy.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the addition of DeAndre Baker. I've tried to paint the total picture here, right? This is a guy that was a first-team All-American. I'm pretty sure I voted for him first-team All-American because I have an AP vote in college football. First-team All-American his junior year, and I think he left a year early. Started his last 2 years at Georgia, played his freshman year all 12 games, was a press corner, which Steve Spagnuolo likes to do, so that fits. 5'11", 190-something, he's that Nick Saban. You know, Steve Spagnuolo kind of adheres to the Saban rules. He doesn't like 5'8 guys, right? He's that long, kind of lanky guy. 4'5", 140 is like slightly better than what Marcus Peters was. If you read his write-up going into the draft, you'd say, oh, Marcus Peters, who will tackle? That's who this guy is. But he went number 30, not number 16 or wherever the Chiefs took Marcus Peters. And then he sucked for the Giants. There's no way around it. Pro Football Focus right. called him, ranked him the number 183rd corner in the NFL last year. Zero interceptions. You know, near as I could tell from talking to people around the league, the kind of vibe around his, you know, being accused of robbery, which is never good. Right, I've never been accused of robbery, and I'm kind of an idiot sometimes. Certainly in my youth, you kind of put yourself in a bad spot. He had some character flags coming out of Georgia. He's been absolved of all charges. That's a good thing, right? And even the lawyer for the other side's been charged with extortion, and so that's right. a note. But today, I really took a step back when I asked Andy Reid about, like, hey, you know. Tough first year in the league. Does it take a couple years with a corner? Like, is an apprenticeship year a good thing? And Andy Reid, I felt like, took the opportunity to send a message through the media that get your head on straight. You got to work hard, which makes me think that word is he didn't work very hard with the Giants, and you got to keep your nose clean or we'll get rid of you. I mean, that to me was like, hey, talent, let's take a shot. But I won't be stunned if 2 weeks from now DeAndre Baker's not even in the organization. What do you think? I think it's a no-risk, all-reward signing for the Chiefs, but I don't have a lot of optimism with this. Where's your optimism?
You know, you talk about his college career. He was actually one of the corners I was interested in them taking that year.
Sure.
He had excellent tape in college, and you mentioned him being a good press man corner, which is true. He also was considered a guy who knew his way around zone coverage, which is not always the case with young corners. And that's something where you look that he's got, you know, kind of a lower level 40 time for a cornerback. You know, he's not really a burner. You've seen Spagnuolo's willing to take guys like that in a system if they can play physical and know what they're doing in zone coverage, like a Bashaud Breeland, right? You don't need to be a burner if you're Breeland. You need to play physical, know where your assignment is, be willing to contest at the catch point and tackle well. Those are all things DeAndre Baker did very well in college. He was terrible with the Giants in year one. And there's obviously always concern when what you hear about a prospect coming out is they're concerned about how hard he'll work, et cetera. And then he gets in the pros and is just awful. With regards to the charges, I can just tell you I've never seen an attorney get charged for extortion after a criminal case got dropped, like what happened there. And that's, you know, I've only been practicing for about 7 years, but that's still, it's wild for that to have happened. So I'm not going to hold whatever happened there against him at all. Just because it's so wild that the charges would not only be just dismissed completely, but that a civil attorney on the other side of things gets charged with extortion. It makes it sound like the whole thing might have been a plot to kind of, you know, try to extort someone. So the big thing for me is it's a no-risk, like you said, deal, where they can have him on the practice squad for a few weeks, see how hard he's willing to work. And if he shows he's willing to work, they control him for multiple years. In terms of an exclusive rights free agent, restricted free agent. So there's really no risk here for a really talented player. And the Chiefs are in a unique position in multiple ways. One, they're the world champs. So they really, you know, they don't need him. And they know that. And he knows that. Two, they're a team that if he can't succeed in Kansas City, that's going to be tough for him to get signed anywhere else, right? Because They're known to be a good team with a good locker room and good coaches and all that stuff. Three, the existence of Tyrann Mathieu, it makes me not really worry about whether or not someone's going to become a problem in the secondary room or not put in the work. And so they really have all the things are in place for a very, very, very talented player to succeed. But I think he's just going to have to do absolutely everything right. The good thing is if he does, they potentially end up with a first-round caliber talent that they acquired for basically nothing. One final note to think about all this, you know, for as much as people talk about the Chiefs needing cornerbacks, you know, Bashaud Breeland's playing very well. Rashad Fenton's playing very well. You and I touched on this last week. The Charvarius Ward maybe isn't playing quite as well as last year, but he's still playing well. And L'Jarius Sneed, who was playing very well prior to injury, is on his way back. So they don't even have an immediate need here. And I think the cornerback room has actually become kind of underrated at this point.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think it's a, you know, we talked about it. They're hugely underrated on a national level. I do wonder a little bit, is it the safeties are so great? Madison's great. Spagnuolo's great. And they've just done a nice job of hiding him. And so, like, is there, like, this thing? Like, obviously the Raiders unleashed something on him and caught him. And what you don't want is for to have that game in the playoffs because you lose once, you go home. And is there some kind of wideout that they just can't match up with that can happen? Like, is DK Metcalf looming in the Super Bowl? And it's like, DK Metcalf had 13 catches for 276 yards and 4 touchdowns. Like, oh, my God, how did we not see that they were vulnerable to this thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's the fear in the back of my head. But I don't think anything like that's going to happen because I think the coaching staff is too good. But to your point, yes, I think if he hits, they're 5 deep at corner. And, you can never have too many good cover people, right? And so if they can go 5 deep, you know, then you can bracket and double DK Metcalf and know, well, we can go one-on-one with Tyler Lockett and their 3 and their 4. Like, that's what 5 deep can give you is that, and we can, of course, you can take on some water and have an injury. If he can be anything near, like I talked to a personnel guy, said we have him as a round 3 because I remember going through all the corners because we all thought the Chiefs were going to take a corner that year. So we have him around 3. We have him as a high 2 ability-wise, you know, maybe late 1, but we put him at round 3 because of the question marks, because of the character questions. So if he'll just play like a third-round pick, then they're 5 deep at corner if they're all healthy. And so, like if you're a defensive coordinator, like, you know, I think in terms, like, right now I coach Little League basketball. Like, and you got your defenders, and I'm like, if I had, you know, 3 of those, I'll be like, I'll take those 3 people out. I don't care who else is on the floor, right? Like, you got that. You're like, you have so many different combinations you can throw at whatever the passing game weaponry is that I don't want to say it's over, but if they're healthy at the end and he plays close to what he was supposed to be, then it's over. It's over. They win. I don't see who beats them.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, the NFL is gradually, you know, I know Eric Eager talks about this quite a bit, the wisdom of building back to front at the NFL, that coverage can be more important than pass rush, which I think in a lot of ways in the aggregate is true. If you have great coverage, that helps your pass rush in ways that is tougher to scheme around than a good pass rush with weak coverage. And so one thing, if you are going 5 deep with guys who are talented and can perform, one, you're more insulated from injury because you're always going to want 4 cornerbacks who can play. And when you've got guys that are relatively interchangeable in multiple spots, that's a huge deal. And like you pointed out, different skill sets are important. And it helps you dictate matchups. You know, not every receiver wins the same way. You mentioned DK Metcalf. He presents a very different problem in coverage than, say, Devontae Adams, if that's who they match up against in the Super Bowl, right? And so having multiple and varied skill sets is such a big deal. And if they are able to field the coverage unit like that, where he's able to unlock what he was supposed to be, in addition to how well Sneed played, and hopefully he picks that back up after that injury, it really does make them very, very difficult to beat, barring an absolutely perfect game plan or perfect performance from your offense.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking to Seth Kizer here in the program. He's with us on our T-Mobile guest line. Let's talk a little bit about the extensions given to Andy Reid and Brett Veach. You know, how nice is it, like, for the all the questions and all the tough times we've had as Chiefs fans, they now have locked up Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Brett Veach, and, of course, Clark Hunt doesn't have a for sale sign out in front of the, you know, and the Hunt family out in front of One Arrowhead Drive, which I think one of the things that maybe doesn't get mentioned enough, and I've talked about it actually when I go on with all my friends in Vegas, their shows about where the Chiefs have a decided advantage is the ownership, right? Like, the Veach and Reid aren't signing low market deals. Clark Hunt has made it clear, and the Hunt family, I always like to include them because, you know, he's Clark makes the decisions, but they're all equal owners. So I think that's part of it. And they're all staying in. They're not all fighting and trying to sell their share of the team, which we've seen with the Bolin family and different things that are going on. But the ownership part, to get this done quietly underneath the radar, take care of all the players first in the offseason. But Andy and Brett know that they're going to be fine. Take care of them. Like, the ownership side of this is giant. And all the – if there are four pillars, owner, quarterback, coach, GM, put it in any order you want. I'd put quarterback, coach, GM or owner, I think, are kind of the same as far as their value. But those are the four most important things amongst everything else. By far, all of those are locked up long-term. It doesn't get better than being a Chiefs fan right now.
It does not, in terms of stability, in terms of, you know, even if they just had Patrick Mahomes locked up for the next 11, 12 years, right? Even if that was it, it would still be arguably the best situation in the league for fans because he's the best quarterback and he's locked up for the longest time. But then you combine Andy Reid and then you throw in Brett Veach, and that makes it pretty easy. And I'm glad you bring up the Clark Hunt thing because I think we've touched on this before, but he really doesn't get enough credit for the steps he's taken as the controlling decision maker. He made a bunch of tough decisions. And one thing that he's done is he's always gone out and he's found, you know, kind of the hot candidate or the, you know, a very good, you know, candidate. You know, we think about Andy Reid. The reality was, had the Chiefs not hired Andy Reid, he'd have been hired by another team within 3 or 4 days. And it would have been the smart move, as we've seen. And he went out there, he flew out there and made it happen. And what he's also done, in addition to going out and getting guys, then he stepped back and stayed out of the way for the most part. And that's what you want your owner doing. You know, as bright a guy as Clark Hunt is, he's not a football guy. And he's not trying to treat this like his personal Madden franchise, where he's instead, he says, well, I'm paying you the big bucks. I hired you. You make the decisions. I'll pay the players you think are good and can make it work. And there we go. And those types of advantages with the GM, with the coach, with the ownership, you know, you can only spend so much money on players, even though, you know, I like to joke around that the salary cap is fake. I mean, there's eventually a limit there, right? You can only spend so much money on players. With ownership and with general managers and trainers and coaches, those are the hidden advantages that you can pay for. And Clark Hunt's been willing to do that. And I understand people can talk about, wow, he's got so much money. Of course he does. Look, nobody likes spending a lot of money. And he's been willing to do it to build the Chiefs into a winner. And I think it's just super impressive what he's done.
I'll go you a step further on Clark Hunt. Just two things, super quick. One, hiring Scott Pioli, he hired the three-time NFL Executive of the Year, right?
Absolutely.
It's like I talked about hiring Quinn Snyder, who, by the way, is very successful with the Utah Jazz for Mizzou. And I know, yes, Bill Self was there, but hiring Quinn Snyder was not a bad move. It just didn't work. Hiring Scott Pioli was not a bad move. It just didn't work. Okay.
Right.
But the second thing is Andy Reid. I've talked to people in Philadelphia, right? The freaking Cardinals plane with the Cardinals logo, like supposedly the negotiations with Andy Reid took place at this private jet airport in Philly. You know, with Reid and Chiefs people, and frankly, even I think Scott Pioli was there as well, and Clark Hunt got it done with the Cardinal plane sitting there with its logo right outside, and he never went to Arizona. He never got on the plane and never got to Arizona. Clark Hunt made sure that it happened right there. I mean, that's something that should be you watch all the success. If Clark Hunt nickel dimes and the Hunt family nickel dime Andy Reid, he's on a plane to Arizona and maybe never gets back. So
absolutely, and
big time.
He deserves a lot of credit for that. He closes things out, and you're absolutely right with the Scott Pioli move. And I would even say he made the right move to hire Scott Pioli, because at the time, I mean, he was the guy. Every Chiefs fan I knew, including myself, was incredibly excited that they got Scott Pioli. But he not only did that, he was willing to fire him too. And he was willing to, you know, when he saw that what he had in Brett Veach and that there were maybe some contract type issues and various certain other things that maybe were less than as good as they could be with John Dorsey, he was willing to make a tough decision there too. These aren't easy decisions to make, and he's made every one of them. And really, you know, I think I said to you, you know, throughout this, I said, you know, Brett Veach has been basically batting 1,000 in the last year as a general manager. Clark Hunt is the same thing as an owner right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And to your point initially about Patrick, when you got Patrick Mahomes, that makes it a lot easier to hit for a high average.
Yeah.
Last point, and you know, I could talk to you for an hour here because there's so much stuff going on, but I always feel better. Like my kicker yesterday was about how Travis Kelce is 10 yards behind the pace to set a new record for receiving yardage in a season. He's about 10 catches behind the pace of, or really only a couple catches, about he's on pace to come up 10 catches short of the single season catch record for a tight end. And I just marvel at it because I don't have Kelce in any of my leagues because I'm like, no one's ever had 4,000 yard seasons in a row. So why would I go in big on Kelce trying to get a fifth consecutive one, right? Then the law of averages have to kick in, and instead he's barreling towards what is his best season ever. And when you wrote about it, I'm like, okay, good. Seth is on my back, man. This guy is phenomenal. And I think we, you know, as good as he is, actually here in KC, we kind of take Kelce for granted, don't we?
Absolutely. He is on a historic pace, and because he was an older, you know, player when he started, relatively speaking, because he missed that first year as a rookie. He came out when I think he was 22 already. I mean, people are already, you know, well, I wonder who the tight end of the future is. It's still Kelce. Trust me. There's a reason they extended him. He is the best tight end in the league, and it's by a pretty wide margin. And if any time, you know, Game Pass, the season ticket holders have free access to Game Pass, so you can look at the All-22 film. Just watch any game. Click some random Chiefs passing play. And unless they're having Kelce run some sort of, you know, some sort of decoy or something like that, odds are he's open. Because Travis Kelce is always open. And I don't know how he does it. He runs unique kind of herky-jerky routes. But he's just got such great hips to sell fakes that don't seem like they should fool defenders. But they constantly send cornerbacks who are twice the athlete he is sprawling. It's just worth watching. And that's the best way I can really try to get people to appreciate it, is just say Travis Kelce is always open, and there's almost no other player in the NFL. Forget tight ends, player in the NFL that you can say that about. He is one of the best 10 receivers in the league, pass receivers in the league at any position, and he really should not be taken for granted. There are very few players I would take over Travis Kelce. I think he's the most important Chief on offense, not named Patrick Mahomes. And when one of the other guys is Tyreek Hill, that's saying something.
No doubt. If you have a strained sprain, fracture, or sports-related concussion, the University of Kansas Health System has a Saturday morning walk-in clinic. It's at I-435 and Nall. See a sports medicine physician without an appointment Saturday mornings through November 21st. For more information, go to kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Time for our final four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Seth, I will start you with this. Let's see. Long term, who's a bigger threat to the Kansas City Chiefs? The Raiders, obviously the second best team in the division right now, or the Chargers, who seem to have the second best quarterback, at least a young one at that. Who do you fear more long term, Raiders or Chargers?
I think the Chargers. I understand Derek Carr is having a career year, and it's just he's so dependent on blocking that I think when their offensive line stops playing at an elite level, we're going to see him regress again. And I think Justin Herbert's got the goods. I think he's going to be really good for a really long time.
Is DeAndre Baker a Chief in 21?
I think so, yes. I've just developed so much faith in this coaching staff to develop the people that can be developed. And maybe I'm naive, but I always think people can be humbled and brought back around to the idea that, oh, hey, I need to work for this.
I mentioned it before last year. No tight end had ever had four consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. Kelce barreling towards a fifth. How long does that streak get to?
As long as he's healthy, for at least the next 3 or 4 years. And as long as, like, Patrick Mahomes doesn't get hurt. And honestly, even if Patrick Mahomes got hurt for most of the season, mm-hmm. I think Kelce gets 1,000 yards with most other quarterbacks, too, with Andy Reid as the head coach. I think a worse quarterback might target him more, honestly, because he'd be more of a safety blanket. I think for another 3 or 4 years, I think he's going to set a record that never gets broken.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's unbelievable what he's doing. Let's hope he stays healthy. That is the key, right, for everything going on in the NFL always. All right, and finally, give me your prediction. Chiefs Raiders, how's it look? What happens? What's the who's the winner? What's the score?
I think the Chiefs win this one big. I think they're prideful guys, and there's just enough going on here that I think the Raiders are a better team than people are giving them credit for. But I think the Chiefs, when they bring their A game and execute it, they just overwhelm teams. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think the Raiders are going to fall behind relatively early, and they're going to lose some of that swagger that they picked up from a well-earned win. And I think the Chiefs win by 2 scores at least.
Okay, get a score? Give me the number so I get a feel for the offense and defense part of the equation.
I'm going to say roughly around 40 to 20.
40 to 20. All right.
So 3 scores.
Yeah, there you go. I'll take it. Seth, always great talking to you guys. Can catch Seth's great work at The Athletic. He is worth the subscription alone. He, Nate Taylor, Alec Lewis, great stuff at The Athletic. Make sure you got a subscription right there. And, of course, his Chief in the North newsletter. It's a must read. He's got some great stuff up there about Mecole Hardman and Travis Kelce here recently. Go check it out right now. Seth Kizer, you're the man, buddy. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Seth Kizer from The Athletic with us in the program. We'll take a break. I'll give you the kicker next. Talk about, listen, there are certain people, if they can get something done, right, then can't we all get it done? We'll talk about that next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
What's with your sour look?
This is my face.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. How many current franchises have never had the number one overall pick in the NBA draft? The answer is 6. Pacers, Heat, Nuggets, Thunder, Jazz, Grizzlies.
Wow, that's a short list. GoodSenseSubs.com, what we are playing for. You can watch the NBA draft, hear the NBA draft right here on 810. You can order some subs to watch it. GoodSenseSubs.com, the app, the easiest way to do it. Remember, 10% back if you're part of that loyalty club. GoodSenseSubs.com, locally owned and operated, founded right here in Lenexa, Kansas. Listen, I'll leave you with this for the kicker. You know, we were talking about the COVID and everything. Vaccines are on the way, all right? And there's things they want us to do to try to keep the numbers down, try to save other American lives. And I know we're all frustrated. I know we all want to do what we want to do. My mom is 79 years old. She survived cancer, and she was 18 inches clear of the skywalks at the Hyatt when they fell. Kids, ask your folks about that. 18 inches and had just walked under it. She's almost died twice in her life. Everything in her life is about her grandkids. She hasn't hugged her grandkids since March, and she's not going to until things get safer. If my freaking 79-year-old mom can do things to make it better, so can you. Think about that.